Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Three Down Nation podcast. I'm Justin Dunk, joined by John Hodge and JC Abbott. Fellas, we made it through the regular season. You two have put in yeoman's work to get us to this point. I'm not talking about the teams and anybody else in the league, just you two. I like you guys.
Appreciate it. Usually I push through to the end of Grey Cup, and then at Grey Cup I get sick. I am ahead of schedule. I am currently ill. I'm playing hurt today. Apologies for my nasally voice. I will try to mute my coughs and sneezes as they arise. But hopefully this means I will be healthy come Grey Cup. Because if I still have this cold come Grey Cup, man, the meds are just not doing it.
See, Hodge, the better strategy is what I have to do. And you know this from working with kids back in the day as a teacher, is when you're around the youths, they are full of disease. So you're just sick constantly. So basically from September onward, I'm battling one sort of cold or flu or another. It helps me have this beautiful voice that you hear every week on the podcast.
Or you're just mouth breathing like regular.
I can't breathe through my nose. It's always clogged.
Darth Cheezer strikes again.
Darth Cheezer. Oh, that is great.
And a new nickname is born. JC, we got to teach you that Ujjayi breath.
I don't even know if I can say Ujjayi breath.
Maybe one day you'll come to me with hot yoga or Pilates. There you go. Today we're discussing the football god smiling on the Blue Bombers.
The Elks' controversial game-winning rouge.
The upcoming East and West semifinals.
CFL attendance increasing by over 1% in 2024.
Canadian players leading the league in rushing and receiving for the first time ever.
And Bo Levi Mitchell wanting to win CFL MOP. But first, CFL Commissioner Randy Ambrosi will leave his post this offseason after the league's Board of Governors narrowly voted against him receiving a contract extension. The Winnipeg Native was hired in 2017 and is the fourth longest-serving commissioner in league history. He has indicated plans to stay on into 2025 until a replacement is found. What do you guys make of Ambrosi's tenure and his impending departure from the league?
Let's start with the departure because it's being messaged as a retirement. And with all due respect to Randy Ambrosi, he didn't want to answer questions about the Board of Governors vote, but this is the reason that he's not the commissioner anymore. To be honest, he was great with me, let's say, on the 620 CKRM Rider radio broadcast. And I felt like as he's gone along in terms of my dealings with him, he's become a little bit more open and honest in some of his answers and hasn't rested on some of the cliches or tried to skirt around things like he did earlier in his tenure. But that just comes with comfort in the role. And there's going to be lots of talk about the legacy that he's left as a commissioner. And people out there are already debating online, within the media and elsewhere, about what did he get done and what did he not get done. But I will give Ambrosi full credit for talking openly in my exclusive interview with him after the news dropped about wanting to do more and the fact that he really felt like a 10th team was close to happening and then the COVID pandemic knocked that away, which I think is 100% factual. On the flip side of that, Ambrosi talking about television ratings exploding, attendance potentially exploding, their social media growth being off the charts. That's a lot of hyperbole to me. And that's where I kind of lose him in terms of trusting what he says. Because Hodge, as you noted, and you've done the work on this, CFL attendance being up over 1% is not exploding. It's not even close to it. It's essentially flat, okay? The television ratings are going to be down from an English perspective, up from a French perspective. So I would just like the next commissioner, and quite frankly, some other people around the league, to understand that it's best to be truthful and honest, because then people can believe what you say. That has more value, in my humble opinion, than anything from a human perspective. And I think Ambrosi learned that as he went along. And the major positive that he can lean on is that I think you can make an argument, and it's probably true, that the CFL's ownership is in the best place that it's ever been. Was Ambrosi part of bringing Gary Stern into the league? Yes, but they fixed that. And as Ambrosi said it, and I'm paraphrasing, he got the league off the treadmill of having to worry about the next ownership crisis.
Yeah, I mean, I'm interested to see who the next commissioner is. We'll see who wades into that conversation. But to me, when it comes to Randy Ambrosi, the negatives probably outweigh the positives. But let's be fair. I made a list. So positives. Ownership certainly improved in BC, Montreal, and Edmonton is a super, super small sample size with Larry Thompson. But obviously, it was going to be untenable long-term for that team to remain publicly owned. So I think you check the box there. That's a win. I also think that securing a US TV deal that, while still not like fully legitimate and, you know, raking in the money for the CFL's coffers, is a plus from where they once were. I think that is maybe a small check. Revenue sharing being implemented between the teams, certainly Grey Cup revenue sharing as well, I think is a win, getting the governors and respective presidents more on the same page. Also, Randy was always accessible, right? I think in 7 years, I was turned down for an interview one time with Randy, and that was because it was, I think, about a month before his State of the League address, and they were kind of saving things for then. So I think that's a check. And then also, you know, maybe a small check, but I do think that as much as maybe the league didn't invest in amateur football as much as it should have during Randy's tenure, I do think that his passion for the game was palpable, right? He talked a lot about being the biggest cheerleaders for the players and these teams, and he was very visible, certainly in CFL stadiums doing that. And as part of commissioner, you know, kissing babies and, you know, showing up and shaking hands is part of the job. So those are all things that I would say were positive. On the negative side, the CFL did not expand under Randy Ambrosi's tenure. In Halifax, summer of 2023, he, right to my face and Justin Dunk's face, so the interview is on our YouTube channel if you want to find it, back from July 2023, said that expansion was the closest ever to Halifax and seemed unbelievably excited. Well, literally nothing came of that. CFL 2.0 was a disastrous endeavor. Nothing that Randy talked about happening, exhibition games in Mexico and these types of things, creating a pipeline for guys to go to other leagues and develop. None of that happened. And no money has been added to the CFL's coffers that anyone is aware of.
The Ambrosi CFL told me, Hodge, just real quickly, that global players were shooting the lights out in the CFL currently.
Yes.
I think that's a little bit of an overstatement.
It's an overstatement, but they've had a great season.
Every time,
I'll pause.
You get your turn later. The only thing I will say preemptively to your global argument is every global player who goes out and makes plays is doing so because a Canadian got taken off the field. And in the Canadian Football League, I have a hard time listening to anybody argue that it's great having guys from Germany and Australia out there making plays when you're taking someone from St. John's, New Brunswick, or Fredericton, or from Red Deer, or from Regina,
that's
or wherever.
That's not true,
off the
though.
Field.
If they're
it's,
starting,
it's 100% true.
They can only start in place of an American.
You'll get your turn.
Defense or
pause,
or
pause,
offense,
pause.
Only
you will get your turn.
In place of an American.
You'll get your turn. Stop. You'll get your turn. This is Hodge time. JC time is in a moment. The CFL was the only league that didn't play during the pandemic. I shouldn't say the only league. It was probably the biggest professional league that did not play during the pandemic. I appreciate that playing during the pandemic would have been exceptionally difficult for the CFL. That being said, not playing was also exceptionally difficult for the CFL.
You talked to behind
and
the
exactly.
Scenes.
It seems like there was a pathway to that happening. Probably the biggest strike against Randy Ambrosi, other than expansion perhaps, is his performance in front of the Standing Committee on Finance during the onset of the pandemic, where he sat virtually in front of some of the most powerful people in Canada with his laptop camera stuck up his nose, saying, "We're not going to tell you why we need this money, but the CFL needs $150 million and we're going to die and this is terrible and this is bad." It was one of the worst speeches I think I've ever seen somebody give. And then, of course, his messaging during the XFL merger that was rumored, I thought was poor. And then as minor things, there was also the statistics, which mean, still don't work perfectly, but were truly awful during the 2023 season. And then the all-star snafu, we'll call it, of 2022. So, you know, when you look at some of the neutral site games, I guess that's another positive. The Victoria game this year, as JC laid out, was not great to cover, but it did sell out. Touchdown Atlantic, we had two of those that were sold out. Like, it's not all bad, but I think the bad outweighs the good when it comes to the tenure of Randy Ambrosi. And that is why you've got, I think, the Board of Governors reportedly making the decision 5-4 not to renew his contract for beyond this year. We know that Randy will stay on beyond Grey Cup, at least in terms of until a replacement is found. But by and large, I can understand why the Board of Governors, as much as I appreciate some things about Randy's commissionership, wanted to go in another direction.
I'm going to push back a little bit on some of the things that Hodge said. Not because
let him hear it.
Not because I necessarily love Randy Ambrosi. I've been critical of him throughout his tenure as commissioner. I've fired some fastballs directly at his face during his time as commissioner. And I think there are some glaring mistakes that he has made over that time. However, I think when we look back 15 years, 10 years at the commissionership of Randy Ambrosi, we are going to feel more positive about it then we do now, having just gone through it. Because as much as we like to criticize, and as much as he has had some glaring snafus, those have mostly been with optics, not actually with results. And I have a hard time believing that there's another person out there that could have got some of these things across the finish line that we've talked about here. The pandemic season, to me, that's a write-off. Like, I know that there are rumors, there are people who believe that it could have been played. I don't think that there was any chance the CFL was ever going to play that season, realistically, once you got into the weeds. And frankly, I don't even know if they would have been in a better financial position had they played that year and had to spend all those costs on what would have been an extremely difficult bubble season. Frankly, the fact that we survived the pandemic is a testament to some of Randy's, let's call it, ingenuity or ability to scratch and claw out of situations. The problem with all of that was the messaging the whole time. Didn't reassure fans, had the XFL stuff, said things were going to happen, and they didn't. Same thing with expansion. I don't think there's another person in this country who could have pushed a team on Halifax in the last few years with everything that happened with the pandemic in that municipality.
I disagree with that.
I mean, the mayor said that, what are they going to play in the Micmac Mall? Like, unless you find somebody who's...
He said that because the CFL wanted to force a CFL-specific stadium on Halifax. The mayor also said, JC, if you remember, that they were very much open to the CFL being part of a stadium that was multipurpose.
And the CFL has been open to that for 3 years. Like,
that's what I'm saying. There's a pathway there.
And it hasn't
multiple times on the show.
Who's going to build it, though?
If you went about it in an Atlantic Canadian way, that there was a pathway to get it done. But they tried to play bully ball. You can do it on the field if you're the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, but you can't do it in boardrooms when you're trying to get people together and create a majority to get a team out east. I believe it could have been done.
I'm going to disagree with you, because if it could have been done, people have been trying to do that since 1984. Like, that's not just an Ambrosi problem. He may have been the most recent example. He may have been the most vocal about wanting it to happen. I don't think there was a commissioner that exists that would have pushed that over the finish line, not without somebody finding a rich owner in that area, which, if that person exists, it's not because Randy Ambrosi didn't.
There were people that were interested. We were all told that.
I'm not saying there weren't people that were interested, but if that person exists, the person who's willing to make that financial investment, I don't think Randy Ambrosi scared them off, right? Like, that person
I would agree.
Has
I don't
to
think it's
willing.
Necessarily on Randy Ambrosi, because there are other people in the league who have power and sway.
Well, and let's talk about that for a second. Yes, being the commissioner of the CFL is an exceptionally difficult job. I think it's a lot like being the president of the United States, or the Prime Minister of Canada, where you are judged based on decisions that you're making with input from, in the case of our country, 13 different member clubs, so to speak, down south, 50 different states, who all want different things, right? Who all have their own different agendas and egos and biases. So yes, on the one hand, anything should be taken with a grain of salt when propping up or dissing the commissioner of any sports league. That being said, presidents and prime ministers still need to be judged based on their performance. And yes, there are mitigating factors, like JC said. Personally, I disagree with what you said about the pandemic season. I still think a bubble season could have been played. If even insofar as getting television revenue, the CFL got zero television revenue in 2020 because they didn't play. If you play a season, then your TSN deal kicks in, and that at least covers the cost of your players. Like, I don't think the league would have been worse off financially had they played. And it certainly hurt them financially in 2021 when they returned to the field, having not played a game in 18 months. But regardless, I'll let you finish your thoughts since you let me finish my thought.
Well, my point is simply all of these situations have been mostly driven by optics. I mean, you brought up CFL 2.0, right? And I think from an on-field perspective, if you removed anything Randy Ambrosi said, there is no way
you
could
probably need you to hop out and come back in. Hodge and I can carry on. Your audio's breaking up a little bit. But I agree with what, Hodge, you're saying about expansion. Let's talk about that for a minute, because we were both there together talking to some people behind the scenes and understood that it was close and that I think it could have been done if the CFL, Randy Ambrosi included, and yes, he is the one that everybody's going to pin it on because he was a commissioner, fairly or unfairly, that it could have happened. There was a lot of momentum there before the pandemic. The HRM, Halifax Regional Municipality, was willing to put in $20 million before the pandemic happened. I'm not saying they were willing to do it after, but they were willing to at least have the conversation about a CFL stadium that was multi-purpose. JC, we got you back. There we go.
Hodge, you brought up CFL 2.0. And if you remove anything Randy Ambrosi said, you just look at what CFL 2.0 has generated on the field and how it has improved year over year, I don't think you can frame it as anything other than a success, right? Maybe it's not a smashing success. We haven't found the next Yao Ming.
Think
we
about
went
that
from a
for
situation
a second.
Where teams.
That is exactly right, what I'm talking about when there was too much hyperbole from Randy Ambrosi. We're going to find the next Yao Ming. The
that's,
next Yao
that's
Ming,
exactly
with all due respect
the point
in football terms, is going to be in the NFL every day of the week. So just have some mediocre expectations or say this is the program and let the results speak for themselves.
Let the man finish his thought. Let him finish.
I completely agree with you, Dunk. And that's my point, right? From an on-field perspective, every team's got a guy they trust. Many of them are playing multiples by choice. Several global players are starting, which would have been unheard of 4 years ago. That's all success. But instead, it was framed as Yao Ming, as it's going to be a financial boon for the league. All of those things were utterly ludicrous when they came out of Randy Ambrosi's mouth, and they're utterly ludicrous now. So the results, the positive results that have actually been generated by something, are completely undermined by what he says beforehand, right? It's those public snafus. It's the hyperbole. It's the immense positiveness all the time when he's speaking. It's the corporate synergy, the corporate lingo that he uses in his press conferences that turns everybody off because then they don't see the results. I don't think Randy Ambrosi's tenure is worse than any other commissioner. I don't think it's necessarily better, but I think that the ownership changes that were made under his tenure are massive for the league's future. I think we are in a slightly better position now overall than we were when he took over. Unfortunately for everyone watching, it feels like we're in a worse spot because we were promised gold at the end of the rainbow and we just got basically more of the same with a couple new leprechauns in the mix. Like that's essentially what happened with Randy Ambrosi. As we get further removed from it, I think we'll look on him more fondly because of some of those accomplishments, the ownership, the 7-year CBA. I don't think that can be diminished. But the public snafus
when it comes to the global
have soured
thing,
him in the moment.
Bailey Devine Scott started 3 games at the end of the year for Calgary at strong side linebacker. Tyron Vrede started 3 games at middle linebacker for the Red Blacks. And then Thibaut Dubois and Solimane Karamoko had like one-off starts in BC and Winnipeg, respectively. So when you say that global players have become starters, we're talking about 8 games over the course of the entire season, which is not nothing, but it's close to nothing. And also to suggest, well, if you ignore everything that Randy said, then it was a success. I'm going to start using that logic the next time my wife is upset with me about not taking out the recycling or something like that. Well, honey, if you ignore everything that you said and that I said, my behavior was actually fine. Like that is a ridiculous way to quantify something. But I don't disagree that there might be some, you know, intrinsic value in having people come from other countries to play our game. I just don't think it makes sense ever to take Canadian players off the field. Like there are very good U Sports kickers and punters, for instance, who now have no way to play in the professional ranks unless they go overseas because teams are saying, well, we don't want Canadian kickers. We play a global and you can go find somewhere else to play. That doesn't make sense.
I mean, Punters, there's only
like
one
Dean Faithful has done it. Jose Maltos has done it. Like, I get what you're saying, but.
Well.
No.
Dean Faithful hasn't done it well.
JC, let's put it this way.
There was one global starter last year.
What if there's
one global starting kicker this year.
The company that you're working for said, we're going to replace you to meet our quota of global people working in this company. It's a Canadian company, hypothetically, but we're going to replace you. How would you feel?
I mean, that depends entirely how it's framed, but I'm a big advocate for the ratio, and my belief in the global program is rooted in that. I'm a huge advocate for affirmative action in every way, shape, and form, Don.
I'm just saying, it's much different when it hits home.
I mean, I don't think it has legitimately prevented anyone from finding employment.
There are Canadian punters who will disagree with you, but fair enough.
I get that, but the Australian punters are better. Like, it's not like we're taking worse punters. We're taking the Ray Guy Award winner. Like, it's not like he's some scrub off the street.
At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Let's talk about a couple of other things to do with Randy Ambrosi's tenure, and revenue is one of them that, to be quite honest, we don't really know. And I do think it is hard for CFL fans because they look around at some of the other major professional sports leagues and you see franchise values increasing. Now, I do think that that potentially has happened depending on the teams you look at in the Canadian Football League. And most of that is based on the partial sale that Bob Young did with the Hamilton Tiger Cats. But it's not like the salary cap is going up and up and up and exploding every year either. That would really tell us where the revenues are. And yes, some of the teams are public and put their books out there, but there can also be some creative accounting. So I think for fans, you look at the salary cap, and I hate doing this, but compared to the NFL, and it has absolutely exploded. Meanwhile, the CFL salary cap has been stagnant, and the players have gotten better year in and year out. I don't want to start comparing eras, but the product on the field has been elite. Canadian players have never been better, leading into my next point that it was very clear, I don't want to pin this on Randy Ambrosi, but that people within the CFL Board of Governors were open to playing four downs and joining with the XFL. And oh, by the way, wanting to either lower or get rid of the Canadian ratio. So when Randy Ambrosi sits there and talks about how great it is that Brady Oliveira led the CFL in rushing and Justin McInnes led the CFL in receiving, and that two Canadians did that in the same season for the first time ever, it rings hollow to me. Again, words mean something. Actions, in my opinion, mean more. But when you are out here behind the scenes wanting to cut the ratio, and then now you want to wave the pom-poms, as Hodge said, about Canadians leading your league in rushing and receiving, it doesn't line up. It's inconsistent. And fans are not stupid. They see this stuff. They understand this stuff. So I would implore the next commissioner to understand that his words have meaning.
Or her.
His actions definitely mean more. But when you're talking to the fans, the passionate fans of the Canadian Football League, your words matter. Cut the hyperbole, cut the BS, cut the fake positivity, and just be real with everybody. It's 2024. People are educated. There's so much information out there at our fingertips every day. I just hope the next commissioner has enough respect for the fans to talk to them in a better way. That would honestly, guys, be my biggest criticism of Randy Ambrosi. You guys are done? That's it?
Yep. That's exactly the same thing I said. Optics, the way he spoke, that is ultimately what soured many people on Randy Ambrosi.
Also, didn't he very shortly after taking over as commissioner say he wanted to double league revenue?
Yes.
That was the goal? We don't know if he succeeded in that.
And again, if you're going to be transparent,
again, great to shoot for this. I was just going to say, it's good to shoot for the sun, the moon, and the stars. But if that's the standard you're setting and that's the expectation you're setting, then inevitably people will be disappointed when, you know, promised a grand slam, you hit like a
bunt single,
you know, a single, yeah. or you pop fly out or something and, like that.
You know, I understand that for years the CFL likes to keep things secret and they don't want their business out there. But you tell CFL fans that you want to double your revenue, but there's no baseline for them. You know, give us some sort of a baseline. Our revenues are around this, and we want to get to this. Now, when you do that, you put it out there and you can be held accountable, but we're held accountable in all of our daily lives, business, family, personal lives, whatever it is. So if you're going to say that, back it up. Anyways, done with Randy Ambrosi, but I do think that, JC, you made a smart point. When we look back on his tenure in 5, 10, 15, 20 years, I do think people will remember it a little more positively as when it was actually happening. And dealing with the coronavirus pandemic was not easy, as much as from what I believe, based on people behind the scenes have told me, that they could have played that year, that it was a major crisis, you know, for everybody around the world, but especially the Canadian Football League, not only to deal with, but also to dig out from. So I think he did get better as his tenure went along. And the one other thing I want to note, fellas, from that interview was what Randy said in terms of learning on the job. And he said that he wishes he would have learned at the start that you're not going to get all nine teams to buy into every idea, that you need to start by creating a majority. And I think that's important for CFL fans to hear because, you know, and I said this on 620 CKRM too, the commissioner doesn't just wave a wand and things happen. You have to have at least a majority for any of the things that he talked about to potentially happen. And at the start, he thought all the ideas, and I'm paraphrasing obviously, would just have support from all nine teams. But then he learned that each of the nine teams is a different business, is a different market, approaches these different ideas from different perspectives. And I think that to me, honestly, was the most telling quote from Commissioner Randy Ambrosi, that you have to not only learn, but it's not also as easy as everybody thinks. He can't just make a unilateral decision and go ahead with it. So I think that that should also be remembered when we're talking about Randy Ambrosi's time as a commissioner, any of the ones that have come before, and the next one that's going to come after. The Winnipeg Blue Bombers clinched first place in the West Division with a 28-27 win over the Montreal Alouettes that came with the help of Mother Nature as a late-game gust of wind caused a short Joseph Zima punt, giving Sergio Castillo a second shot at a game-winning field goal. Were the Bombers lucky, or did Winnipeg deserve the dub?
I think it look, you've got to be lucky to be good. You got to be good to be lucky. Yes, there was an element of luck there, for sure. I mean, I didn't get the chance to talk to Joseph Zima about this punt, but, you know, post-game, Mike O'Shea talked about when you have a gust of wind like that on the drop, which is him referring to, you know, the punter releasing the football for it to literally drop to the punter's foot. A strong gust of wind can physically blow the football off course, and then you've got to chase it with your foot, and if you don't chase it perfectly, you run the risk of a shank, which is, of course, what happened. Joseph Zima, by the way, finished third this regular season in net punting. He's one of the best punters in the CFL, and he's one of those amazing globals who JC keeps talking about all the time on this show. That being said, I mean, let's also talk about the fact that Lucky Whitehead broke a punt return for a huge gain. Let's talk about Winnipeg going 2-for-2 on their last two red zone opportunities. Let's talk about Winnipeg's defense forcing Montreal to go 2 and out on 3 of their last 4 possessions. Like, yes, there was an element of luck with the wind, and I actually think Mike O'Shea was foolish to send Sergio Castillo out for the first field goal attempt from 61 yards. Like, Sergio has hit a couple from 60 this year, but I was messaging Pablo Herrera Varguera, who was on site, and I would encourage everybody to check out Pablo's article, Postgamer, from Montreal, because he's got some firsthand accounts of the weather conditions. But he said during Sergio's 61-yarder, there was no wind. Like, the gusts had basically stopped. And if you are trying a 61-yard field goal with no wind, like, at that point, just have your offense go for it on third down. If you don't get the first down, you've still got over a minute, and you're going to have an opportunity to get Montreal's offense off the field and see if you can set something up late. But that's not what Mike O'Shea elected to do. I didn't agree with that decision. But regardless, I think it's easy to boil a play or a game down to one play. People will talk still, right, about the infamous 2009 Grey Cup, where it's like, well, Saskatchewan would have won the Grey Cup if they didn't have the 13th man out there. And it's like, okay, that's not wrong. Like, it's technically true, but the Alouettes dominated every facet of that fourth quarter. Like, the Riders had 20 different opportunities to put that game away, and they routinely failed to do so. And I think that a game like this is a similar circumstance, right? This was an evenly matched game throughout, and the Bombers made a lot more plays in the fourth quarter than the Alouettes did. So, yes, the wind helps, but I think it would be wrong to suggest that it was the reason Winnipeg won the game. I also think it'd be unfair to say, oh, the wind didn't make any impact whatsoever. I think there's some gray here. The Bombers certainly deserve credit, but I think Mother Nature might get a little bit too.
Yeah, this is one of those circumstances where the Bombers are deserving victors, but they got a little help. And I admittedly didn't get a chance to watch this game live because I was coaching, and I heard all the hullabaloo online about the gods interfering in the results and giving Winnipeg first in the West, and I didn't quite know what it was all about. I didn't really understand it at first glance, and then I saw the video, and that wind gust truly came out of nowhere. I don't know if I've ever seen something like that ever happen in a football game where, as we know in the CFL, the weather is the third team out there on the field so often, but rarely does it just show up for 10 seconds when it's needed most and then disappear. I thought that this was yet another fantastic finish. And let's just say, in a week that didn't matter very much in the CFL, I think three of the four games were absolutely spectacular, two of which had zero meaning whatsoever. I also think we're probably going to set a record for talking about punters the most ever on this show, given that we just discussed the global program. We're discussing Zima now, and spoiler alert, our next segment will also be about a punter. So giving some love to the boys with the boots.
There was a Rider fan that came over to the set at the Harvard Studio 620 Lounge at Mosaic Stadium. And I was like, all you guys got to talk about post-game, after the Rider Stamps game, by the way, is the punter for Montreal, Joseph Zima. How could he kick that ball like that? What happened? Break it down. It's like, bro, there was wind. There was some rain. Did he shank the punt a little bit? Yes, I'm sure Zima would tell you he wished he could have caught it better and turned it over and had a punt that traveled further. But stuff happens. I'm like, you think we're going to talk about a punt and a punter for 90-plus minutes on the postgame show to Rider Nation? Like, that's how into it Riders fans were. And that lounge in there, as they call it, is where people can come from the 100 level and get warmed up. There's other spaces inside the stadium too, suites and stuff that are warm. But mainly if you're on the 100 level, you come into the Harvard Studio 620 lounge and you get warm. But before the game, all the TVs were on that Bombers-Alouettes game, and every play that was made by Montreal got a bunch of cheers that were picked up by our feed on 620 CKRM and also on the YouTube channel at Sports Cage. And you could sense the energy being gone when Sergio Castillo hit that kick among Rider Nation, and then that transitioned into the game, especially from the Riders' perspective, because they made a bunch of moves. So I'm just giving you the lay of the land as it was from the Riders' perspective. I don't think Saskatchewan has ever been a bigger fan of Cody Fajardo than they were on Saturday, which just added to the whole thing.
I will also say this. I mean, I don't want to throw Joseph Zima under the bus, but like, yes, the win made that punt tougher. He still also could have punted the ball better. Right. Like, and this is another factor. Like,
he shanked it
completely. Right. And obviously punting into the wind is a hard thing to do. And I'm not speaking from a place of knowledge like, oh, yeah, I punted for 10 years in the CFL. But we have seen CFL punters do better punting jobs in tougher wind conditions. That has happened. So, yes, again, Mother Nature played a role, but it could have been handled better by Joseph Zima. Then again, as an Australian, the wind probably blows the other way back home in Australia, like the toilet's flushing. So maybe he's not used to dealing with wind. I don't know. But regardless,
the toilets flush the other way.
Yeah, the toilets flush the other way in the Southern Hemisphere. It's true. The other thing I will say
Coriolis effect, I believe.
Shout out to Zach Kolaris, who on the postgame show for 680 CJOB gave an amazing line when asked about the onset of that crazy weather moment. He said it was like the Wizard of Oz when the Wicked Witch shows up. And he even went as far as to sing the little song. And I thought that was an excellent kind of picture to share again with those of us who are not at the game physically. I was not there in Montreal for this one. Some games you can, by the way, really cover well, I feel like, from distance. It's like, all right, pull to pull. I feel like I have the story, despite not physically being there. This is one where being there in person would have been, I think, greatly advantageous to not just obviously witness the leaves that came pouring over or the wind that came over Mount Royal, but to really feel it and feel the energy in the stadium and hear the buzz of the crowd as they were realizing, like, holy smokes, this game that we thought we just won might not be over. I would have had to listen to the air horns. So that was maybe a nice thing for me to not have to listen to. But regardless, I would have loved to have been there. But I appreciate those who were on site who painted a picture for us, including Zach Kolaris on radio and, of course, our guy Pablo Herrera Vergara, which is pretty cool. And if nothing else, I'll echo what JC said really quickly. Week 20 was awful in the CFL. Awful games. Boring, lousy, terrible. Week 21 was sensational. So full credit, especially to those teams who had nothing to play for. That was, except for the last game, the first three were three of the best in the entire regular season. And especially that wind gust, that moment, is one we'll be talking about, I think, for certainly years, if not decades to come.
Dunk, you
this
need
game,
to...
fellas. Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, Dunk, you need to get that Australian caller who calls in every week about Adam Korsak on the show as a guest. I'm sure he could weigh in more effectively on Joseph Zima's punts, another fellow Aussie.
Mark is a beauty. He's an absolute beauty. He actually tweeted me on the weekend, too, to let me know he was tuned in. Man, that guy's great. He talks a lot about Australian rules football, which I don't know how much our listening audience among Rider Nation enjoys. But nonetheless, fellas, that game and the ending were absolutely massive, I believe, for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, who are a veteran football team that I think could use a week off. Mm-hmm. Can we just talk about, though, if the Alouettes won that game and the West Final was indeed going to be at Mosaic Stadium, would the Riders have been favorites in that game? Just like the Bombers are going to be favorites for the West Final? Like, I think that it was more important for Winnipeg to win that game than it would have been for Saskatchewan to be in first place, if you know what I mean. I think that the Riders, yes, do have some veterans, but they're a younger team and can still potentially make a run to the Grey Cup. But the Bombers getting that week off in the fashion that it happened in was absolutely massive. Agree or disagree, Hodge?
Fully agree. Yes, we've said it all year. Hosting the West Final is a tremendous advantage across the top three teams in the division who are only 4 points apart, right? Like not a lot separates BC, Saskatchewan, Winnipeg. They play different ways. Obviously, they all have strengths and weaknesses, but you know, in any given game, they can all beat each other. So hosting the West Final is huge. I fully agree that had the Riders finished first, they would have been favored. As it stands, Zach Kolaris talked about a post game, how much he is excited for the week off to rest his body. I think a lot of those veteran players are. And I think the other factor is hosting that West Final, you get to host a tired team, right? Like, playoff games are exceptionally physical. And if you're Winnipeg, I mean, this is how they've made it to the last three Grey Cups. They haven't played very well, right, in the West Final over the last 3 years. Zach Kolaris in particular, they've won because the team that's shown up has been a bloodied and bruised version of whoever it was, be it the Saskatchewan Rough Riders in 2021 or BC these last 2 years. So hosting, the importance of it can't be understated, I think, especially in the West where the weather is a bigger factor. The Edmonton Elks beat the Toronto Argonauts in overtime with the game-winning rouge from Jake Julian. The Argonauts failed to score on their first possession in the extra frame as Liram Hirilahu missed a 49-yard field goal, giving Julian a chance to win it by punting the ball out the back of the end zone for a one-point victory. JC, was this a valid strategy, or do you think the CFL should change any rules surrounding the rouge?
I think everyone who listens to this podcast knows that I'm a staunch traditionalist and a defender of the rouge until the day I die. I understand the criticisms of this because, unlike in a regular time scenario where you're gaining field position to put yourself in a spot to kick a punt single to win in overtime, it's already been given to you. But to that, I'll just say, well, the Argos should have scored that. In some way, shape, or fashion, if you don't want to be beaten by a rouge, score a damn point. That is my only rebuttal to that. And I think from the Elks' perspective, this was a brilliant decision from Jarius Jackson in terms of the way he utilized his personnel. We all know that very rarely in these scenarios where a single point can win it, do you actually send out the punt team because it puts you further back from the line of scrimmage. It's tougher to get it out of the back of the end zone. You don't have the same amount of margin of error you do if you're aiming for the field goal posts. Maybe you get three, maybe you get one. But Jackson knew that he was playing a rookie Canadian kicker in Vincent Blanchard for that game, who was great at the University of Laval, but you know his career long's just 49 yards. He'd missed an extra point earlier in this game. It was a significant moment to try and thrust a rookie in. And he had the best punter in the CFL in his arsenal in Jake Julian, who just had to hit his season-long average of 54 yards to get the single point here. He, of course, smashes it and in the process sets a new single-season record for average punting yards, absolutely destroying the mark set by John Ryan back in the day by, I think, almost 3.5 full yards worth gained by Julian in that exchange. He's had a tremendous season. He was the right person to call upon in that moment, and it was smart of Jackson to trust him, utilize the uniquely Canadian rules, and know that he just needed one point, and he had the boot to get it done.
I get that Americans still can't understand what's going on with the Rouge, but, you know, it's pretty simple. Just read the rule, take it in, think about it for a minute, and you'll understand. It's okay, okay? On the other side, Joseph Zima, we're all on him for not being able to punt the ball enough yardage down the field to push Sergio Castillo back or make it an even longer field goal, yet everybody throws their arms up in debate about the Rouge when, as you laid out, JC, Jake Julian bangs that sucker out the back of the end zone. The Rouge rule is what it is, okay? It makes Canada unique. Perhaps there's one tweak that I would like to see, that if you line up for a field goal and you miss it, that you don't get rewarded with that. But in this situation, I love it. It's part of the game. And you still, as Joseph Zima showed us, and Jake Julian as well, have to execute to get that point to win the game. You got to bang it out the back of an extremely long end zone. And I was hoping in that situation for the old kick it in, kick it out, fellas. That would have been hype in overtime. Come on.
I think something else we have to take note of here. And like, let's not just focus on that last play, right? Liram Hirilahu missed his field goal, right? Mm-hmm. The Argonauts made it harder for him by actually moving backwards almost. I think they took an unnecessary roughness penalty, right? So it wasn't even just the whatever would have been 42-yard field goal. It was instead a 49-yard field goal. So discipline is problem one. Lousy kicking would be problem two. That's not to say Liram Hirilahu was lousy all year. He was excellent all year. He was lousy on this particular play. And then credit to Javon Leak for returning the missed field goal out of the end zone. Like, the Argonauts did three things badly in overtime. Bad penalty, missed field goal, and their cover team did not get down there quick enough to prevent Leak from getting out of the end zone. So it's easy to go, well, the Elks just won. No, the Elks won because their defense took care of business and Toronto took a stupid penalty. Like, end of story, right? So, and now, as I've said previously on the show, I'm not opposed to the rule being changed so that in the final 3 minutes of a half or in overtime, you don't get awarded a point for a Rouge. That doesn't offend me, but let's not strip this down to, well, Edmonton won the game because their punter kicked it through the end zone. Again, that's technically true, but you're stripping away all of the context that led to that situation. Toronto was awful in overtime. Awful. And Toronto deserved to lose as a result. That's my take.
And like, what's the difference? Okay, let's look at baseball for a second. Let's say you had a situation, bottom of the ninth, bases loaded, guy gets beaned, and the winning run comes across the plate. You go into extra innings in baseball now, they start with a runner on second base, okay? Hockey in the regular season is solved by a shootout. Like, I don't know what people get all up in arms about. Execute in the situation and you win. Play by the rules and execute, and you can win. Look at the other sports and what they're doing. People don't get up in arms if those situations happen because it's part of the game and the rules. I think it's just this inferiority complex that some Canadian fans have that the Americans can't understand our rule book.
Yeah, they're too worried about being embarrassed publicly. They're like, oh no, the Americans are laughing at us. How will we ever survive?
And the answer is no.
Look at the way the NFL is playing football now, okay? The quarterbacks that are in the NFL now, 5, 10, 15 years ago for sure, would have been in the Canadian Football League, ripping it up, throwing the heck out of the ball, and running around, okay? Warren Moon never would have been here if the NFL was playing the way that they are now back in his era.
Well, I think there was another reason why
there was
Warren
another
Moon wasn't
element to
playing
that one
in the NFL back in the 70s.
Agreed. But I'm saying that factored into it.
Yeah, I think that was the
he
main
was welcomed
factor,
into the right. Canadian Football League.
Regardless, Americans aren't watching the CFL these days anyway. They're watching the NFL. And that's fine.
That's not true.
Well,
what's the percentage of our traffic that's American? We had an American caller on the postgame show from Kansas City, Missouri.
Cool. Hey, and good for you for knowing that Kansas City's not in Kansas, unlike somebody who's currently running. That's beside the point.
Oh, boy.
At the end of the day, I don't mind the rouge. All I'm saying is let's not oversimplify this and say that Edmonton won because they punted the ball at the back of the end zone. No, Edmonton won because Toronto took a stupid penalty. Then the defense made a great tackle. And then Javon Leak made a nice return. Like, period. Like, they had to do work.
Can we also just pause for a second and note what Toronto was doing on that punt single as well? Like, they only had one returner back there, which put them at a disadvantage in terms of a potential kick it back scenario. And the one guy they sent back there to stand at the back of the end zone and hopefully bat the ball down as it sailed over his head was David Ungerer III, who's had a very nice season as a receiver, but is listed at 5'10", which probably means he's actually 5'9 and a half, if we were being honest. That's not really the guy you want reaching up there for extra length to try and knock down a punt before it goes out of bounds. Like, why are you not sending somebody back there who's like, and I don't know the heights of the Argos roster off by heart, but like a 6'6 dude, a 6'5 dude, somebody who can reach up there and maybe get a few extra inches on Unger to bat that down. And then you've got another person in the end zone to try and either kick it out or run it out to save that point. I don't know if it would have mattered, but it was suspect to me that that was the decision in terms of personnel that the Argos made in that circumstance.
It's a fair question. DeMonte Coxey, I think, would probably be the best option there. Before we move on, Dunk, can you say the word inferiority again, please?
Inferiority.
We have found your version of Loyola, which JC can't say. Inferiority.
Also, I'm shocked Dunk hasn't talked more about Trey Ford leading up to
Oh, no, we're about either. To move on. Don't bring up Trey Ford. Trey Ford was great. End of segment.
We'll talk about Trey Ford in the offseason. How about that?
Oh, beautiful. The CFL's playoff matchups for Saturday are officially set as the Ottawa Redblacks visit the Toronto Argonauts in the East semifinal, and the BC Lions travel to the Saskatchewan Roughriders in the West semifinal. Which game are you looking forward to most, and who you think wins?
You know, to be quite honest, I'm going to say both. I have some people
fence-sitter
inside the league that believe... Yeah, that's fair, but I'm going to say both. Too bad. Suck it. I don't care. I'm going to go out on a limb here because some people have told me around the league that they actually believe, I could eat my words here, but that the Ottawa Redblacks have a chance to beat the Argonauts, and we'll see if some of that is proven out on the field at BMO Field. And the game in Saskatchewan at Mosaic Stadium is intriguing, considering it seems as though all signs are pointing to Vernon Adams Jr. starting at quarterback for the BC Lions. And we'll see if this renewed energy that JC was going on about after the BC Lions beat Montreal, who didn't even care to be out in the West Coast that day, actually means something in the playoffs. And I do think that when you look at that matchup, there's going to be the revenge angle there because the BC Lions, last time they came to Regina, which wasn't long ago, came in there and got absolutely whooped in every phase of the game. They got beat down. And I hate the cliches and the numbers when people talk about, oh, it's hard to beat a team, you know, X amount of times in the season or, you know, two times in a row in the same situation. Because I think that's a bunch of BS. It's about what happens on that day. But BC is going to be feeling some type of way for what went down there in the regular season meeting at Mosaic Stadium. And I think that game could be a great one. But I also think the East semifinal could be really good competition too.
I was all in on the West semifinal until I saw the Ottawa Redblacks play at home against the Ticats in a game that didn't mean anything in the standings. But Bob Dice decided to roll the dice and say, hey, we are going to play all of our players and run the risk of injury. And that team played with energy. They played with tenacity. They played with gall. I was extremely impressed with what they were able to do. I think maybe their only shortcoming right now is the run game. By the way, if I was the Ottawa Redblacks, I would be bringing in Kevin Brown right now, who was excellent for the first half of the season for Edmonton, got replaced by Justin Rankin, and is currently a free agent after finishing the season in Edmonton on the practice roster. Braylon Addison, I think, is a great, you know, receiving option out of the backfield. Kevin Brown is somebody who can push the pile. Regardless, 534 yards of offense in this game for the Red Blacks. Drew Brown was sensational. Khalil Pimpleton was sensational. They did not take many penalties at all. Very impressed with that. I was also a little bit leery of the defense because the Tiger Cats also put up 533 yards. But the Ticats also have, by far and away, the number one offense in the CFL, at least in terms of yardage. So, you know, I think that Ottawa should fare a little bit better defensively in the East semifinal. I will still, I think, be taking the Argonauts to win this game next week. But if you'd asked me this a week ago, I would say that the Argos are going to win by double digits. Now this feels like a coin flip game, a last second field goal game, or dare I say, a last second rouge game out at BMO Field. The West semi is going to be great too. I want to see what Vernon Adams Jr. brings to the table, right? We know that very recently, just a couple weeks ago, the Lions went into Mosaic and looked awful, so bad. That was October 12th. They went and lost 39-8. That was Nathan Rourke's BC Lions. I want to see what Vernon Adams Jr.'s BC Lions can accomplish at Mosaic Stadium. I still don't think that the Lions are perfectly suited to playing out in the cold. I can't speak to Regina. I can't speak to Winnipeg. This week is supposed to be beautiful weather for the time of year, at least.
It's going to be chilly in Regina, my man, around zero.
Yeah, only you as a Southern Ontario guy would call zero chilly at this time of year on the prairies. That is not chilly. That is nice.
Part of that's because I'm a little wiener.
You are also a little wiener. That is true.
I got goosebumps just him mentioning it. Like I'm cold already. It's like
Vancouver soft.
Lily white and soft.
The point is, I am very excited for both of these games, and I want to give credit to BC and to Ottawa, who both looked like dogs in the worst way possible just recently and have found a way to galvanize themselves heading into the postseason. Very impressive return for both of those clubs.
What do you got against dogs? I thought you liked dogs.
I've just heard that phrase used before, but dogs is also kind of a positive and a negative sometimes. So, I don't know. I do love dogs, though.
I appreciate that the Ottawa-Toronto game looks a lot better now than it did just a few weeks ago, and I agree with that assessment. I also don't think it's outside of the realm of possibility that the Red Blacks can pull an upset here if Drew Brown continues to play at the level that he has recently, which is now back-to-back 400-yard performances. If they can get Khalil Pimpleton in behind that Toronto secondary, if their blockers can give them enough time against that Argos pass rush, anything is possible. But to me, the easy answer is the West semi here, because I don't really know what we're going to see at all here. You mentioned the Riders knocked the socks off the Lions in their last matchup, but that was Nathan Rourke's BC Lions, not Vernon Adams Jr.'s BC Lions. And we saw last week what a response he got from the team, and we also saw how good they looked earlier in the year when, let's not forget, Vernon Adams Jr. led the Lions against the Riders and knocked their socks off in a victory. Now, the caveat to that is that wasn't Trevor Harris's Saskatchewan Rough Riders. That was Shea Patterson's Saskatchewan Rough Riders. So truly, we haven't seen these two quarterbacks who have both played exceptionally well at times this year when healthy and on the field actually face off against each other and show their versions of their respective teams. I think it's going to be a really intriguing matchup. I don't think the weather necessarily is going to play that much of a factor, particularly with William Stanback back in the backfield for the BC Lions. And there's some potential for fireworks with these two quarterbacks who I think if you looked specifically at just the time they've been on the field, and of course, availability is an important statistic as well in the CFL, but from their time actually starting games, you could argue VA and Trevor Harris are the two best quarterbacks in the league this year, or have been the most impressive when they've been available and starting. Hopefully both show up to that capacity and we get a real shootout at Mosaic.
I was going to correct you there, but you did it to yourself. When Trevor Harris has been healthy and on the field, he has been among the elite quarterbacks in the CFL this season. If he played the whole year, I think he would have statistics up there with Bo Levi Mitchell, who threw for well over 5,000 yards and 30 touchdowns. Guys, I'm going to throw this at you because we have the piece up on the site. The Montreal Alouettes have the shortest odds to win the 2025 Grey Cup. If you had to pick one team from the six that made the postseason from a betting value standpoint to win the CFL championship, who would it be and why?
I'm picking the Toronto Argonauts for that. At plus 475, as we have up here on the site, I think that Toronto has an easier route to the Grey Cup. The Alouettes did play well this past week. I thought they bounced back in a nice way against a tough Bombers team. That being said, I mean, the Alouettes are 2-4-1 in their last seven games. Like, this team has not been what it once was. So to me, I think that the money line is too short on Montreal or Winnipeg. I think Toronto is good value. I think BC is good value, but I'm curious for what JC would say.
Yeah, to me, if you're going to make a bet like this, I like the long shots. Like, anybody can win in these playoffs, and both of these three seeds, the long odds here are definitely longer than they deserve to be. We've talked about the Redblacks and their struggles, but they're getting healthier. Drew Brown's been playing great. I think the Lions are a better team with VA right now. Plus 2,000 for Ottawa and plus 1,200 for BC. That would be very enticing to me if I can put a small chunk of change down on those things and potentially have it pay off. They only need to win three games for that to happen. And there have been stretches where both of those teams have rattled off far more than three wins in a row against similar type of opponents. Personally, I think the Saskatchewan Roughriders at plus 600, though, are the best bet, sort of going in between the two. I think they are easily right up there with the Blue Bombers in terms of how good that team has been. I think it's a coin toss between the two of them, albeit with Winnipeg having the advantage because of the bye and home field. And if you're getting them at longer odds than Toronto, I think that is a nice little bet you can make, put some money in your pocket potentially.
That's where I see the value, JC, is with the Saskatchewan Roughriders. You have Trevor Harris, who has played, if not the best football, close to the best football since he's come back from that MCL knee injury in week 11. I think the only quarterback with more passing yards than him during that time and passing touchdowns is Bo Levi Mitchell, who was on a crazy pace to end the year. And the defense forces turnovers. So you put that all together, and the fact that it's a bit younger of a team, I think they could potentially sustain that playoff run, having to play a semifinal game and win the Grey Cup. And you get them at plus 600, according to the odds that we have on the site. Elsewhere, you know, I'm with you, JC. You want to look at the long shot odds. I just don't see enough from the BC Lions to even put any money down on them at plus 1,200. You could possibly make an argument for the Ottawa Redblacks if they get by Toronto, because you know, I think they could match up with Montreal, and they've been in that building a bunch of times in that rivalry that's so close between the two cities. But I do think it is the Riders that have the best value. And if you want to bet on the Grey Cup or the games this week as the playoffs go along, make sure you do it through freedownnation.com. It's not only playoffs in the CFL, fellas. It's playoff time in Canadian university football. The Canada West, RSEQ, and AUS wrapped up their regular seasons this past weekend while the OUA played their first playoff round. What game stood out to you, and which conference semifinal matchup are you most excited about?
Well, there are two that stood out to me. One was the Golden Gaels of Queens beating Windsor 22-19, and that's because with 5 seconds remaining in regulation, Russell Weir hit Logan Walton for a 39-yard touchdown pass. I'm told that the live stream of this game actually gave out shortly before this happened, so unfortunate for those who are trying to watch it digitally. If you were there in person, presumably you saw it. Tough loss for the Lancers, a team that was up and coming, didn't quite take that next step this year. But that being said, kudos to Queens, a team that is still swinging. They will play at Wilfrid Laurier this upcoming weekend in the OUA semifinal round. The other game that stood out to me was the Regina Rams earning the fourth and final playoff spot in Canada West after scoring 16 unanswered points in the fourth quarter to beat the Alberta Golden Bears 29-22. I'm also excited because the Rams will be visiting the University of Manitoba on Saturday afternoon. That's November 2nd. And I will have the opportunity to call the game alongside Brendan McGuire for 620 CKRM in Regina. That'll be a blast. But as for the playoff game, I am most excited for, outside of the one, of course, I'm calling, that would have to be the Guelph Griffins at Western Mustangs, because I cannot wait to sit on the show next week and listen to Dunk make excuses for why his alma mater got absolutely pasted by those purple horses.
Yeah, Dunk, do you have anything to say? Just, I know you're looking right down the camera right now, about Western or that school, something you want to tell them to do or anything?
Those days are past me, man. It feels like a different lifetime ago, to be quite honest. If you know, you know, though.
If you know, if you don't know.
You know what I will say? I will say, I bet that there will be some University of Guelph students who make the trip and paint themselves up with a phrase on their back or their chest or a shirt that goes something like Wuck Fester.
Very, very nice.
You guys know about this?
I am very aware of this.
Oh, of course. Yes. Very much aware.
Yes.
I'm talking about the t-shirts and stuff.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They'll be good. Okay. They'll be good.
My favorite is there was a fan that ran on the field that was all painted up with that phrase. I think it was at a homecoming game. That's awesome.
I think that happens in basically every rivalry too, where there's a different there's a different letter in front of the uck, but there's always something. For me, when it comes to this time of year and the playoffs are on, there is exactly one conference that I am locked into, and that's the Canada West. And I think you are seeing the stage sets for some very fascinating playoff matchups out here. You mentioned the Regina Rams capturing that fourth playoff spot. They've been extremely hot as of late. Huge game by the Manitoba Bisons, knocking off the UBC Thunderbirds to clinch first place. Shout out to Braden Stubbs, 244 yards, 4 touchdowns in that game. He was an absolute monster. That sets up a semifinal matchup that I think could be an incredible game between Saskatchewan and UBC out here in my neck of the woods. If you got Isaiah Knight going up against Riker Frank, that is a matchup between running backs so compelling that even a running back hater like me can get up for it. I think that's going to be a great game. And don't count out Regina in the other Canada West semi either. The way they've been playing, Manitoba is a tough test. I think they're the best team out in the West right now, but you can't rule out anything come playoff time. And I know our colleague Brendan McGuire is fired up for that game.
The game of the week had to be the University of Regina Rams coming back down 22-4 in the second half, the third quarter in particular, and winning 29-22 on the strength of Christian Katende running for 228 yards. Fellas, most of that came in the second half, an unbelievable performance. It was the third highest single game rushing total in Rams history. For those who don't know, Neil Hughes has the program's single game record with 295. So Katende was trending that way. He scored the game winning touchdown and came out of nowhere for this team to be a difference maker. That defense has been stout all season long, JC. So you're right. That game that Brendan McGuire, our colleague at Three Down Nation, and John Hodge are going to call at Princess Auto Stadium is not going to be an easy task for the Manitoba Bisons, because the Rams are legit on defense. Jackson Sombach, a Calgary Stampeders draft pick in the secondary, is a strong player and has a CFL future ahead of him. But if anybody's tuning into that game, I want you to look for number 95, Tarik Polias, on the inside, because I talked to some CFL scouts and they believe he's got elite potential. Like, some of them think that he should be playing down south in the NCAA. So look out for Polias. He can be a potential game wrecker. Had a couple tackles for loss, including one that went for a safety in that comeback win by Regina. And fellas, I think for me, the game that sticks out is the one that Hodge touched on. It's the Griffins, the Mustangs. And, you know, I don't want to eat my words here, but I think it's going to be closer, Hodge, than you talked about Guelph going down there and getting pasted. That said, Greg Marshall always finds a way to have a consistent running game. And that year, it's led by Keanu Yazbek at the running back position for the Mustangs, but they don't have those weapons on the outside, I think, like they've done in the past. And there's a new defensive coordinator there in Matt Barry, his first year with Guelph, is bringing a different mentality, a different physicality to this Griffins unit from all the defenses, the great ones that he had at the University of Calgary. So that game intrigues me the most. I think it can be close. I'm happy to be proven wrong. I'm not just saying it from a biased perspective. I actually think that that game can be really intriguing to watch.
Some time for Hodge's heritage moment. On this day in 2017, Darian Durant returned to Mosaic Stadium for the first time since being traded to the Montreal Alouettes the previous offseason. The Riders improved to 10-7 on the year with a 37-12 victory over the Owls as Durant was pulled in favor of Matthew Schiltz after completing 9 of 20 pass attempts for 126 yards and an interception. The veteran passer was cut by the Alouettes after missing the playoffs that year and signed with the Blue Bombers, but retired before training camp got underway. The relationship between Durant and the Riders appears to have since been mended, as he is now a regular on Rider Radio and has been inducted into the team's Plaza of Honor. Dunk, you've spent a decent amount of time with Darian Durant. I was at the Dinner with Doubles event during Labor Day where a woman from North Battleford, Saskatchewan paid, I believe it was $5,800 for her and her family to have dinner with Darian at his table. How beloved is he in the province of Saskatchewan?
Dude, it's unbelievable. Wherever he goes there, from what I've seen, there's a tale of Rider Nation fans following him along, and he deals with them so graciously, signing autographs, take a moment to have a picture with them, even have a conversation with as many of them as he can. And it's obviously something you kind of get used to after time, but to deal with it over and over again, he understands what that championship meant to the province in 2013 on home soil. And also he understands what organization and that championship has meant to him, his career, and his legacy. Let's go to the three-minute drill. CFL attendance rose a little bit over 1% from 2023 to 2024. Is that a positive sign for the three-down league?
I mean, anytime you're moving up, it's positive. I think what's happening in Montreal and BC is incredible. What's happening in Edmonton is a concern. But again, Larry Thompson, new ownership, hopefully looking to reverse that over the next year or two. The Okanagan Sun and St. Clair Saints will meet in the Canadian Bowl on Saturday, November 9th after winning CJFL National Semifinals this past weekend. Which team should be the favorite?
Look, I hate to chalk it up to this, but whenever you've got a matchup between the OFC and one of the other two conferences in the CJFL, you got to take the other two conferences. The OFC just hasn't been up to the same level as of late, so I got the Okanagan Sun winning this one. Hopefully the St. Clair Saints, they can prove me wrong. Roland Milligan Jr. did not play Saskatchewan's regular season finale. Is he still your pick for MOP despite sitting out the game against Calgary?
Yes, he is. Brady Oliveira did not play well, and I nominated Roland Milligan Jr. for West MOP, West MODP, and West Special Teams, Most Outstanding Special Teams Player. How do you say that? MOSTP. I think I got it figured out. Hodge, you reported the Edmonton Elks' pending free agent list. Which player do you consider the biggest priority to re-sign?
I think Martez Ivy, franchise left tackle, has flown under the radar a bit. He's a priority. But at the end of the day, it's obviously Trey Ford. This team has to get Trey Ford under contract. You saw how well he played in that game, and the fans there love Trey Ford. Former CFL head coach Bart Andrus has been hired as the bench boss by the ELF's Frankfurt Galaxy. Is that a good hire for the team?
Well, I don't know if you boys realize this, but you are speaking to a paying season ticket holder of the Frankfurt Galaxy. My parents live in Frankfurt part-time. I buy season tickets for them for Christmas every year. So they had to impress me with this hire. As a CFL fan, not sure they did it with Bart Andrus, but he won't have to make the same adjustment to a different game coaching in Europe that he did coming to the CFL. Hopefully it's a little bit better. There have been former CFL coaches in this league before. They haven't had a lot of success. Maybe Andrus can change that. Canadian twin brothers Chase and Sidney Brown played against one another for the first time on Sunday as Sidney's Eagles beat Chase's Bengals in Philadelphia, though Chase scored a touchdown along the ground. How cool is that, Duncan?
It's awesome, man. It's the first time in history, I believe, where Canadian brothers played in the same game against each other.
Second time.
Who were the first?
Ryle and Teo Johnson. Actually from White Rock, BC, believe it or not. Although they grew up in Washington. They played each other in 2003. You got to read my articles, Dunk. Come on. Oh, I had this 3 days ago.
Yeah, recency bias. My bad. Thanks for correcting me, my man. But it is really cool. It shows how fast and far Canadian talent has come and also the upside in the future. Jake Maher threw for 293 yards and 3 touchdowns in Calgary's 27-12 win over Saskatchewan. Do you think that was his final start for the Stampeders, considering Hodge J. McNeil has just said, breaking news, that Dave Dickinson will come back in 2025 as the team's GM and head coach?
I do think it was his last game as a member of the Stampeders. I don't think it was his last game at Mosaic Stadium. I'll just say that. Edmonton signed running back Justin Rankin to a one-year contract extension. Was that a smart move?
It was a great move. Justin Rankin, I think you could argue, as good as Brady Oliveira has been, I think he's far and away the number one running back in the CFL. But you can argue Rankin is number two and fast closing on Oliveira. I mean, 7.8 yards per carry for his entire season, and we didn't even get to see him start every game. I believe he only played 11 and started maybe two-thirds of those games. Rankin was a beast. He moves the pile. I'm glad to see him back in Edmonton next year. For the first time in CFL history, Canadian players led the league in rushing and receiving as Brady Oliveira and Justin McInnes led those categories respectively. Remember who wanted to lower the ratio, Doug?
Indeed. Just let it be said, that was the CFL head office and some of the board of governors. Remember, we don't forget. Bo Levi Mitchell made it clear he wants to win MOP after saying his name was dragged through the mud. Does he deserve the award?
He certainly deserves the award out of the East Division. He got my vote for MOP out of the East. Not sure he's going to win it, but I will commend Mitchell for this. Every player wants to win the awards. Every player wants to win MOP, and most of them give team speak and, oh, well, no, I'm here for my team. Say you want to win it. We know you want to win it. Just be honest, right? It's happened in Winnipeg once before, where a guy literally stood in front of the media, talking about how he didn't want to win the award, he didn't care. And then right after the cameras were shut off, he literally asked me, who I was voting for because he was counting his votes, trying to make sure that he would win. That happened. So for Bo Levi Mitchell to come out and say it, I respect the honesty. He wants to win it, as all these guys do. I respect the realness. Last one, the Calgary Stampeders held Garbage Bag Day this weekend. JC, which quote stood out most to you?
Well, this is a spicy one. There was a couple that stood out. Special shout out to Mike Rose for saying, "I did the best I could with what I was given," in an assessment for his performance. But the big one was Rene Paradis, the team's longest serving player, the kicker, standing up and saying this, and apologies, boys, it's a long quote, but I think it needs to be said in its entirety. As a player that's been here for so long, it's tough to see. Things have to happen. I'm getting calls and texts from alumni, players I played with, and they're wondering what's happening. I don't have the answers to that, but as a player who has been here for a long, long time and loves the city and loves this organization, we've been declining the past 5 years. I'll be straight honest. We haven't won a playoff game since 18. We haven't had a home game in the playoffs since 18 the past 2 years. Last year, we barely made the playoffs. This year, we didn't. It's tough for me to say, but we've been declining as an organization. You don't get it in much more black and white terms than that from a player. And to think the Calgary Stampeders announced today, no changes. Dave Dickinson will be back as head coach and general manager despite those results. That is truly shocking.
Much respect to Rene Paradis for calling it like it is. Say something truthful or don't say something at all. It's not that hard. One other note we should add, fellas. Rick Lillosher, the interim president with the Edmonton Elks, said the team will hire in this order: president, GM, head coach, and he'd like to have all in place by Grey Cup. That's a pretty quick timeline.
That's a very quick timeline, especially, well, I mean, I guess that means they're not poaching a coach from a Grey Cup team. That's the order.
Team that made the playoffs, yeah.
Interesting.
Probably
very
not.
Interesting. All right, we thank you as always for listening to the Three Down Nation podcast. Please join us next week for our analysis of the East semifinal, the West semifinal, and of course, join JC and myself later this week for our playoff picks. We tease them a little bit here, but of course, depending on injuries, all that stuff, things can change fast over the coming days. So we'll talk to you then.